Do you not know that you are God's temple? We heard that from St. Paul today. And once we know that we are his temple, it changes the way we live, and it changes the way we love. We've had time to think about married love this last week. Last Sunday was World Marriage Sunday, which usually falls on the Sunday before Valentine's Day. One of our priests used to always say that Valentine's Day and Super Bowl Sunday were his two most restful days of the year, because nobody wanted an appointment on those evenings. It may be true that priests aren't invited to too many candlelight dinners on Valentine's Day. A table for three. Yes, but I have the privilege of being present at a far more significant time in a couple's life. The day of their wedding. Weddings existed long before Jesus Christ, but what Jesus did was raise marriage to the dignity of a sacrament, meaning that it gives us a picture of the unbreakable love between Christ and his people. This year, the church has given us the gift of a new rite or a new guide for celebrating matrimony in the church. It's not significantly different from what we've done to this point, but it gives us the opportunity here at the cathedral to remember some key elements of how and why we celebrate marriage in the church. And so as we prepare to begin using this rite for all of our weddings here at the cathedral, I'd like to highlight three of those key elements and some slight changes that you might notice that reinforce those teachings. The three things are this. First of all, that the bride and groom are the active ministers of the sacrament, not the priest or the deacon. Secondly, that when we come to a wedding, we come as participants, not spectators. And third, that it's important to celebrate a wedding in the way that the church intends. So the first part, perhaps the most exciting, is that in a wedding, the priest or the deacon is not the one who ministers the sacraments. That's always been the case, but perhaps it's clearer now. He's the official witness of the church, but it's the bride and groom who give the sacrament to each other. That makes marriage different from any of the other sacraments. You are the minister of this sacrament. So a couple things will help make this clearer going forward. One is to move away from repeating the vows after the priest. I, John, take you, Mary, to be my wife, to be my wife. No, that's okay. But perhaps there's a better way that reflects the vows coming more from your heart than from my book. You know, it's still important to use these words, but now the emphasis will be on the words coming from you, with the first encouragement to memorize them. You can do it. Especially knowing that the priest will be there with the words to help, even to read them if you have to. But you can do it. I've seen it, and it's beautiful. Another way to show the couple's central role is a new encouragement that the bride and groom carry up the bread and wine at the offertory. Not a requirement, but a suggestion as a way to connect the offering of your lives with the offering of the Eucharist. So the bride and groom are the active ministers of the sacrament. But everyone else who comes to the wedding is not coming as a spectator, but as a participant. Probably one of the greatest traps we've fallen into lately at weddings and at Sunday Mass is that we kick back and relax as if we're watching a show. You're not spectators. Are you listening? Are you singing? Are you praying? Or are you taking pictures, looking what everyone else is wearing, or just checked out? You're not spectators at a wedding. So to help with this, the new celebration will have everyone stand while the bride and groom exchange their vows and their rings, and even sing a short praise to God after their vows. You may have been invited as a guest, but you are more than just a spectator. So whether it's your wedding or the one you're attending, the reason we're all here is because Christ first took the church as his bride. So the third key element is that it's important for us to celebrate the wedding in the way that the church intends it. You know, we could come up with all kinds of creative songs and prayers and other things, but the reason the church gives us a guide to follow is so that no matter what city we're in, no matter what language we speak, we're all celebrating marriage in basically the same way, because we're all part of the same bride, the church. And that's why going forward, our weddings at the cathedral will not be a time to introduce things that are not part of the guide. Now, the church has made an exception for a couple of long-standing Hispanic customs: the lasso that's placed over the couple's shoulders, and the aras, or the coins that are exchanged. Those are in the guide. But it does not include a unity candle, or sand, or a puzzle, or whatever the newest thing is. Not that it's wrong if you had those things at your wedding, but it's good to understand what context they come out of. Usually an attempt to sell something new, but more importantly, an effort to symbolize unity from a company that doesn't realize that we have the best sign of unity in the world, the Eucharist. And even if a wedding doesn't include the Mass, or one of those getting married doesn't receive communion, the rings that they exchange are still a beautiful sign of their unity. So those other things will not be a part of the wedding. Every parish will never do things exactly the same. But if we do things mostly the same, it will be clearer who we are as a church. So this year, I was at the seminary on Super Bowl Sunday and at my sister's on Valentine's Day. So you wouldn't have found me either day. But I hope to find you in our celebrations of weddings to come, recognizing that the bride and groom are the active ministers of the sacraments, that we come to weddings as participants, not spectators, and that it's important to celebrate the wedding in the way that the church intends. The greatest sign of Christ's love for us, his temple, is that he allows us to share that love with others.